Good morning. This is Erica Crenshaw sitting in for Jim Inkster. This morning on the show, we will hear from Ken Campbell, president of Black Alliance for Educational Options, and Caroline Romer Shirley, the president and CEO of the Louisiana Charter School Association. They're going to help us better understand the lawsuits around Common Core and the importance of choice in our community. Afterwards, we'll hear from Chris Lohr, former chairman of the Ascension Parish Council, who will talk to us about the explosive growth in Ascension. Lastly, Megan Shannon with Center for Musical Arts will talk to us about their one-year anniversary event. Now the news on WRKF. You're listening to WRKF Baton Rouge, 297-5633 or 877-217-5757 is your number outside of Baton Rouge, or you can email us your comments at inkstershow@rkf.org or tweet us at Jim Inkster Show. Let's get started. Ken and Caroline, the two of you have been in this fight for children's education for quite some time. Caroline, help me understand why parents should care whether the legal mandate to implement Common Core is overturned or not in the state of Louisiana.
I think, good morning.
First good morning.
Thanks
good morning.
For having me.
I jump right in.
No, that's good. I like get to business.
Yes,
that's a good thing.
You know, chop chop.
I think it's important both for parents and educators what's happening as it relates to the court systems, because frankly, it's put us somewhat in limbo, especially for our teachers in the classroom to know what they need to be preparing for and what the future looks like. But I think for parents, at the end of the day, what's most important is just understanding what's going on in the classroom and how educators are working to move their kids forward academically. And what Common Core really comes down to, it really shouldn't be about politics. It really should be, are we preparing kids for what comes after school, whether that's college or careers, that they're prepared to compete, not just with our neighbors in Texas or Ascension Parish, but actually across this world. We get smaller and smaller every day as a world, and we think that to compete for jobs and those sorts of things requires that we raise our game a little bit.
Okay. Ken, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How you doing?
Good. So this conversation about Common Core is all about politics. I mean, a good part of it, unfortunately. And recently, two governors, one from Oklahoma and the other from South Carolina, joined Indiana in signing laws pulling their states out of Common Core, because of the fear that Common Core forces states to give up local control. So Jindal obviously isn't the first to reverse himself on this issue. And I know that you speak about Common Core around the state and throughout the country. So how do you address the federal takeover concern?
Yeah, so I think it's important for us to go back just a little bit to talk about why there is a Common Core in the first place. Okay. You know, the reality is, you know, as a nation, we have had and been operating school systems where we have 50 state standards. So every single state had different things for kids in terms of what they needed to know or be able to do in math and in English language arts. And in many cases, states lowered, dumbed down standards so that adults would look better in terms of what was happening with kids. And so at the end of the day, there were a number of states, including Louisiana and Indiana and some of those leading states, that said this is unacceptable. You know, we can't continue to have a system that allows adults to cheat children by lowering standards, making tests easier, and that we needed to come together as states and develop something that was really going to be rigorous, that was going to hold us all to the same standard. So at the end of the day, fourth grade meant the same thing, whether you're in Mississippi or Massachusetts or New Jersey. And that really is what Common Core was all about. Our state and other states voluntarily got into the Common Core piece. We've spent a ton of resources in terms of sending educators to participate in talking about what the standard should be, what the test should be. And so we've really been engaged in developing this thing. It's not as if our educators haven't been involved. We've really been involved. And so at this point, to act as if this is something that's being thrown at Louisiana by someone from outside and the federal government, I just think is inaccurate.
Well, the Obama administration stated that states had a better chance of receiving race to the top funds if they adopted college and career ready standards.
Yeah.
So if Common Core is so great, then why do states need an incentive?
Well, I think at the end of the day, developing tests, developing standards is crazy expensive. I mean, there's a lot of money associated with that. And so part of the other reason that states wanted to do this together is so that there could be some shared cost. And the fact that the federal government could have some money to help do that, to help with implementation, because this is going to be very new, you know, new curriculum, new standard, you know, all those things that people have to buy to put in place to meet these new standards is very expensive. And so by being able to tie the ability to get some money to the adoption of these standards really, I think, was designed to help states, to make it not all on their nickel to be able to do it. Unfortunately, some people have, used that to suggest that this is some sort of federal takeover. That's actually not a concern that I have as a really small government guy. But at the end of the day, that concern is out there. And I think it's important that people address it and you really talk about it and understand what's really there, because you'll see this is really controlled by people in Louisiana.
So let's talk a little bit about the implementation. Diane Ravitch, the former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Education under H.W. Bush, wrote in a blog back in February of 2013 that little field work was conducted before implementation. Is that true? And will we have a conversation about another set of standards 15, 20 years from now because this one doesn't adequately prepare our kids for a global society?
Yeah. You know, I think the reality is standards are revised constantly. You know, this isn't a new thing. This isn't the first time that standards have been adopted or changed in a particular state. That goes on a regular basis, an ongoing basis. So I actually don't have, fears about that. I mean, I think we should regularly look at the standards. We should evaluate how our students are doing against students in other countries. And so, going back to those standards and revisiting them, I think is entirely appropriate, and I would expect it. And so I don't have a problem with that. I think implementation is always a concern. I mean, we're talking about, for the first time, really big time changing our standards in English and math. And so I think there's going to be a lot of prep work associated with that. I don't think it's going to be easy. You know, implementation is always the hardest part. And I think our teachers in Louisiana have done a great job. Our schools have invested tens of thousands of dollars in new curriculum and software and professional development for teachers. And so while it would be great if there were more time, the reality is I think our teachers are ready. And so I think, they're ready. You know, we have teachers every day who have talked about how they believe these new standards are going to be helpful for them. So I think the concern is one that's valid. I think we should certainly talk about it. But I feel confident from the dozens and dozens of teachers I've talked to in Louisiana that our folks are ready to go.
And if I can, Erica, I think it also is very interesting, the idea of testing in general. And, that some folks feel that evaluations, whether we are taking iLEAP, LEAP, which we've been doing in the past, mm-hmm. or transitioning into a new set of standards, there are some people that are just absolutely determined that testing is not and should not be part of the classroom and how we assess kids. And I think there's always trying to find that balance between, again, understanding, are we getting the proper information to our students? Are they absorbing it? Are they becoming better as they move grade by grade academically or not?
Gotcha. Charles, on North Foster, you're on with Ken Campbell and Caroline Romer Shirley.
Good morning, Erica, and good morning to you guys. I find the conversation interesting that the governor's having, especially since Jeb Bush and the GOP push Common Core, but I have two quick questions. I'd like to hear your guests talk about the disparity in testing between public schools and private school students. And also, the governor mentioned takeover. Well, didn't they use the LEAP to form the RSD to take over all of New Orleans schools and attempt to take over the schools here in Baton Rouge? I find him and those standards hypocritical. I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you.
I certainly think there are people who could look at, performance on LEAP. I mean, we have looked at performance of our kids and how we've done, and we have decided that we need to make adults more accountable for what's going on with children. And in some cases, I think we have gone to the level where we've said, look, these adults are not taking care of kids, and so we need to go in and we need to step in. We need new interventions to change these schools. And so, certainly some people could see some similarities there. I really think the issues are to some degree, kind of different. As far as testing between, you know, public schools and private schools test all the time. I mean, they have tests that children take. And we're in a society where testing is you know, for good or for ill, something that we've embraced all along, you know, the way. You know, kids, in order to get into college, have to take a standardized test. That's not a Louisiana test or a Mississippi test or a New Jersey test. It is a national test. Every kid takes the same test. If you want to get into law school, everybody takes the same test. And so we're in a society where certain standards have been set and adopted. And I'm one, again, I'm very optimistic about our children being able to meet high standards and be able to pass tests. And I'm also optimistic about our teachers being able to do a great job in preparing those kids. I think our system hasn't always made that happen, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't do testing. That certainly doesn't mean we shouldn't have high standards.
Well, let's talk about results then. And New York was the second state to implement Common Core. Now, let me read you these statewide results. In 2012, 65% of students tested proficient in math and 55% in reading. In 2013, when they took Common Core, only 31% tested proficient in reading and math. Ken, when those results were published, the most advocate folks who were true advocates of Common Core were completely startled. So, a couple questions. So, one, why was there a 50% drop in results year over year? And secondly, what can Louisiana parents expect if and when their parents sit for the exam this fiscal year?
So, I think the first thing it shows you is that that these standards are actually more rigorous in math and English language arts for our kids, that they are going to be required to do more, that they are going to be pushed harder. I think that's certainly what these results show us. If 61% are proficient, when you take a non-Common Core test and it drops 31, it really tells me that now we're expecting kids and we're going to hold them to a higher standard. I would fully expect, as has been the case everywhere where we've raised standards, that kids grow and they meet those. And so I feel very, strongly about that. And again, I think it just suggests that we have to understand it's going to be harder. Our kids are going to work harder. We're not all going to be, necessarily knocking all these state tests out right away. I have a son who's in 10th grade, and so, I worry about him. And, last year he was doing, algebra and Common Core, and it was a grind. I mean, it was really a grind. But just because it's hard doesn't mean we shouldn't do it.
I think it's also important to note that New York did two things. Not only did they make a huge shift in their standards, Common Core, but they also raised the bar or the definition in proficiency at the same time. So not only did the bar get raised in what was proficient, they changed the testing, and I think that proved to really be part of the result. Not to discount what Ken said, I do think that we will see that this is more rigorous. We will probably see a dip in results, but they did two things at one time, whereas here in Louisiana, we've been making that transition a little differently. So we're transitioning into Common Core. K through 2 here actually has had Common Core in place since at least last year, maybe two years ago. Yeah. But we're not making the same transition in defining proficiency, if you will. We do basic, mastery, advanced. That has not changed. We'll do that, more gradually. And overall, Common Core for Louisiana is not to be fully implemented until 2025. I happen to have a son in first grade. That means Common Core is not actually going to be fully in place until he's a senior in high school. So a slow transition to ease some of the anxieties that people have, but I think a necessary change. And again, what Common Core does, not a curriculum, it's a guideline. And then teachers and local districts will choose how to meet those standards through their curriculum. And I think that really gets misrepresented in what Common Core is and where we're trying to move.
Okay, sounds good. One last question before we go to break. What about the teachers? How are they being prepared to teach the new curricula?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, there's been a lot of teacher development for this. A lot of professional development. Teachers have spent a lot of time. I mean, I'm just always blown away at just how committed our teachers are and how much, how hard they've worked. The systems have really put a lot in place, and I think our teachers are ready.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you. Good morning. You're on with Caroline, Shirley Romer, and Ken Campbell. This is the Jim Inkster Show. Your number in Baton Rouge is 297-5633. Outside of Baton Rouge, 877-217-5757. Caroline, let's talk a little bit about charter schools. I know as the president of the Louisiana Charter School Association for what, how many years?
Too many.
Oh, that's a long, yeah, a long time.
Seven years.
So I know that you travel the state talking to charter operators and charter boards. And so I also know that you are aware that charters in Baton Rouge some time ago were mixed at best, the first wave of charters, that is. And I'm saying mixed at best, but I'm actually being very generous when I say mixed, since five out of the six charters failed to meet academic standards. So why should parents be more optimistic about the five new charters that opened their doors this morning?
Sure, I think that's a really important question. So the charter law has been in place for 20 years here in Louisiana, and actually some of the oldest charters, like Children's Charter School, CSAL, are all in Baton Rouge and have been around a dozen plus years serving kids well. When the Recovery School District came into play, there was an effort and a push to quickly bring in folks to offer choice to parents, and it didn't go well. Those operators, I think, were overwhelmed and unprepared for just how far behind students were and what was needed in the classroom. Hopefully, there have been some lessons learned, and through organizations including Department of Ed, New Schools Baton Rouge, Baton Rouge Area Foundation, they went out and tried to find some operators that were really excellent at what they were doing and ready to bring their models to Baton Rouge, and hopefully their experience and those track records will go into place here and prove to be more appropriate, effective, excellent, better than what we've had in the past. But, you know, charter schools, it's not a silver bullet. It is an idea that we can do things outside of the traditional school system that allows us to be more innovative, more flexible, to address each student as an individual. Sometimes that doesn't work out. Sometimes it proves too much for certain operators or school leaders, and it's significant to understand how important the principal is of a school and their ability to lead in that school, both teachers and parents. So we'll just have to see.
Okay, thanks. We have Jennifer on. Jennifer from Terra, you're on with.
Yeah.
Hi, how can I help you?
Well, I actually had a question referring back to Common Core. I have one or two teacher friends that were saying that the math concepts for the younger children, that they're expected to master something that is beyond their grasp at that particular age. And I'd like to hear that addressed. And then also, does it cover just English, English and mathematics? What about history and science?
Yeah. Is it too rigorous?
You know what? Some people may feel that it is too rigorous. Again, I happen to be, I'm pretty much an optimist. And so I believe that even though it is going to be more rigorous, that our kids will be able to master those concepts. But the great thing is that if we feel like they're overly difficult over time, you know, we certainly have the ability to go back and adjust those. You know, just because we're part of Common Core doesn't mean that we all won't have a voice in trying to shape those as we go into the future. And right now, Common Core does just cover math and English language arts, which I think is important. I had a lady tell me last week that she was upset because of the sex education part of Common Core. And I said, well, wait a minute, there is no sex ed curriculum or standards that are part of Common Core. It is just math and English language arts at this time.
I think on the math side too, again, for the listening audience, the idea is fewer topics that we can dive much deeper into with a student. The idea is, does the student actually comprehend what they're learning? So if you take math, again, I'm 47 years old and was horrible in math and used my fingers a lot. This is now at each grade level, there will be a topic, an expectation, a foundation for that student to learn and understand in math to really, instead of filling in a bubble on a test where you may have gotten lucky and guessing the right number. I was never lucky, but guess the right answer. Now with the Common Core, you're actually going to show your work as a student, whether that's in English and or math. You're actually going to have to show your teacher that you not only got the answer right, you know why you got to that answer. So it's critical thinking, mm-hmm. it's analyzing, and again, building a foundation grade by grade in what we do. And so to Ken's point, there may have to be some changes, but the idea is fewer topics, much deeper understanding of what you're learning.
Critical thinking and analysis is obviously really important, but there were some questions about the design of the exams that it wasn't clear, that a lot of the questions actually didn't make sense, and some of it was confusing. Has that been changed, and what kind of change can we expect in the future?
Again, I think this is, you know, anytime that you're beginning to implement something, you're going to have, you know, places where you find out things weren't as clear as you thought they would be. And so I think there's, you know, Erica, as I said, there's going to be periods of adjustment. They're going to look at, you know, the number of kids who miss a certain answer or a certain question. And they may decide, you know what, the way we phrased this just didn't work. So there's a constant process of evaluating the information they get back. And the great thing is the sample size hopefully will be large enough that they can really determine, okay, this question didn't work, so we need to do this differently, or give our educators a sense of what they need to place more emphasis on.
Donald in Mid-City, you're on the Jim Inkster Show. What's your question?
Yes, I was listening to one of the persons that's over the charter schools talk about the number of operators and things like that. And my question is, there's been a number of schools in Baton Rouge that have been under two or three operators, and their scores are flatlined and actually decline beyond what they were when they were placed on the RSD. And in the same situation in New Orleans, and how do you account for that? And my other question is, are the voucher schools and the charter schools held accountable to the same standards and the same teacher evaluations that the public schools are? And if they are or not, I'd like to know why.
Accountability is always a big issue and
big issue. To Donald's first question, yes, we have had several operators, some instances in a single school that have had varying levels of success or lack of success. Again, the idea is here that for too long we have had in EBR some schools that just were not preparing students appropriately. And the idea was, could you come in and create something, some choices for parents to make? And I think that we're seeing some of those have succeeded, others have not. But what is working absolutely is the idea that parents have become more engaged in understanding what is being offered to their students, what's not acceptable, what works again for their student, and the ability to move in and out of those schools if it is not meeting the needs of their kids. And to a second question, yes, charter schools and voucher programs are under the same accountability that your traditional public schools would be. So ILEAP, LEAP, all the high stakes testing, those sorts of things, as well as probably increased accountability as it relates to the performance that Donald mentioned. If a charter school does not hit its marks as in little as 3 to 4 years, those schools can either be shut down or, as we've seen, the operator removed and someone else brought in to try.
Yeah. And in the scholarship schools, you know, the voucher schools is very important, because if their performance isn't good, then they can be, you know, prevented from taking new kids in the voucher program. So I do think those levels of accountability are very important, and in some cases more rigorous.
Great. Thank you. Next we have Fred from Denham Springs. Your question?
Hello.
Yes. What's your question? Hello.
I have a couple points. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, I'm a civil engineer, and my wife's a civil engineer, and I just have a couple comments, and you can take your choice of which one you want to hit on. Number one, I don't understand why we are so close to implementation, and it seems like there's so many questions from parents. Why don't we expose this more to parents' review before implementation? And as far as a civil engineer, I've had so much math, and I like math, and I've enjoyed how I've studied it, and I don't understand how math is math and how you can change its implementation. And I heard a comment, a man up in New York, I think, is saying his kids used to love math, and now they hate it because of Common Core. The other two items is, if we are going to implement this, why don't we begin at kindergarten and let them go up and start introducing it at mid-school levels with like children's brains and like or exposure to subjects being affected or being exposed like a washing machine cycle. And the other thing is, it's like the Asians, my wife's Asian, Korean, and typically the Asians seem to be some of the more smart people in the world, but the Asians have admitted that their kids have too much school studies, and they're so antisocial, and they're trying to reverse that trend in the world. So.
Okay, thanks, Fred. So a couple questions. Parental input into the design of Common Core. I haven't read anything about parents being involved in that process. And should we start in kindergarten? Does that make sense?
I'd love to jump on the parental part. I totally agree. I think that that's been part of the problem with public education in general is a lack of involvement by parents. And that engagement is a favorite word in public ed, and it can look a lot of different ways. Everything from some educators who would say, all I want from a parent is a well-rested, well-fed kid that gets here on time versus others that are volunteering in the classroom. But bottom line, we are not having enough parents engage with teachers to talk about what's going on in the classroom. We are not engaging parents at a proper level to have access to the test and to understand again what is being taught in the classroom. So I totally agree that we can do a better job on that side of
it.
Well,
Ken, this is your domain.
No, I agree. I mean, I think we have always historically, we've done a poor job of this. I mean, there was a lot of angst when, you know, Louisiana went to LEAP and iLEAP. You know, we got the same, you know, types of concerns. And so I think generally we don't do enough work on getting parental input on sharing with these, sharing things with parents. I think the systems have done a much better job over time. I mean, they've really started to hit the ground and getting parents more engaged and making sure they understand it. But I would argue that, you know, they certainly could and should do more. And those types of concerns, I think, are very valid and the kind of concerns that should be discussed. And they could be discussed in the local school setting so that parents really understand how schools are going to address those concerns, because I think they can.
Okay. And I encourage your listeners, too, they can go online, they can see sample questions both in English and math and start having a better understanding, again, of what this standard looks like. And again, not a curriculum. It's not teaching people how to teach or how to learn. It is just suggesting that these are the foundations that at grade by grade level we should understand. And as I pointed out earlier, we won't fully implement as a state until 2025. So it may be going across all grades, but it's still being done, in my opinion, at a painfully slow pace. I feel a sense of urgency, not only for my son, but for our state, that we're 48th, guys.
That's right.
Can it really hurt to try something different? Because it's not working, and I am tired of being behind Guam and Puerto Rico and Mississippi and everybody else. Let's pick it up.
Absolutely. What a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much. Quickly, where could parents go to get quality information about Common Core minus all the politics?
So I think the best place to go, honestly, is your local school system. And I think going to the local school system, checking out their website, asking them for more information, they should all, I believe, at this point have, you know, crystal clear and great information for parents. And if they don't, we need to be pushing on them to do that.
Got you. Sounds good. So thank you so much. I wish you the best, and I wish you Godspeed in the fight for equality in our children's education. Thanks again. Next up, we have Chris Lohr, the former chairman of the Ascension Parish Council. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Erica. Glad to be here.
Good, 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 good. So let's get started. So the trends in Ascension look really good. There's a ribbon cutting every few months with plants expanding into the area. However, some people believe that this is a slow-moving train wreck, simply because the infrastructure won't be adequate to support the increase in population. Since the most recent effort to raise taxes to fund the infrastructure didn't pass, are we on the course for a train wreck?
I don't think so, Erica. I think it comes down to planning. I think it comes down to being more proactive instead of reactive. I mean, certainly we're proud to be growing instead of dying, as is often the case around the country, in certain areas that have been depressed with the economy. But, you know, we're glad to be at the heart of the economic renaissance of Louisiana. It comes down to trying to plan when we are meeting with these companies, offering these incentive packages, working with LED, you know, really including that on the front end. I think we tried that with Shell, and certainly we wish we would have had that project, but I'd like to see more of that on the front end as we negotiate these projects.
Okay, wonderful. You're on with Chris Lohr, Baton Rouge, 297-5633, toll-free, 877-217-5757. So what about proper zoning and construction? There are many long-term residents in the community that think the parish is growing too fast. And so are they right? Is the parish growing too fast to meet the labor and infrastructure demands?
Well, it's certainly a challenge. I mean, infrastructure is absolutely our biggest need. And we are, of course, growing fast. We were growing fast before this economic boom because I think the school system in Ascension Parish is so good. And we have a great community. But really, it comes down to zoning. We actually have zoning, unlike some other parishes around us. But we do need to do a better job with land use. We're looking actually at the RV park situation right now. We're looking at commercial corridors right now where we want to have those pieces of land. And of course, it comes down to better traffic planning, what we're going to do on that front.
Sure. Talk to me more about the RV issue and problem that seems to be an eyesore to many in the parish.
Well, certainly RV parks are sensitive. Nobody wants an RV park next to them. And so we don't have them allowed in anything other than commercial zoning. But that's probably not the best course of action either in working through it with our planning commission recently. We're looking at where exactly we want to have them in close proximity to plants, perhaps in areas that are conservation right now that have buffer zones, things of that nature. So we're working on that right now. Where do we want to have these massive influx of skilled workers for these plant expansions? How do we accommodate them? You know, where do we place them?
So that brings up an interesting point about labor. Last week's business report quoted an instructor from the River Parishes Community College in Sorrento who stated that welders have always been in tight supply. But as a result of the industrial boom, he thinks that it's worse than it's ever been. So in what ways are the parish officials working with community colleges to help fill the demand?
Well, I'm actually fortunate to be on the RPCC board, actually. In the last few months, I actually just was fortunate to be on there. So I've been seeing up close what they've been able to do. And they're working fantastically with the local plants on making sure their curriculum's aligned. They're actually going to expand the campus that's opening in September. They're going to immediately turn around and do a technical campus expansion to make sure that those, you know, they are training the welders, they are training the instrument techs and everything else to try to meet that demand.
Okay, more back with Chris Lohr in a few moments. Thank you. So we're on with Chris Lohr, the former chairman of the Ascension Economic Development Council, the Ascension Parish Council. What else is going on in Ascension around economic development? Is it all chemical and industrial based?
It's not actually, but that is obviously the focus with the natural gas boom. I do think that brings up a good point, though, that we really need to be focused more on commercial and retail development, because too often we find residents shopping in Baton Rouge, spending their tax dollars in Baton Rouge, and I'd really like to make Ascension more than just a bedroom community. So if that means investing more in economic development so that they could expand their focus and really start working on incentive packages and marketing Ascension to these big commercial and retail developments, then I think we need to do that.
So how is that going to happen with the proposed ADC's budget, the Ascension Economic Development's budget being cut? The mayor wants to cut it by $25,000. You got council members that want to cut it by 75%. So how is that supposed to happen if their budget keeps getting cut each year.
Well, sure. I'm sure, like lots of folks, I'm sad to see what's going on in the city of Gonzales, which is what you're referring to. The city of Gonzales is experiencing some challenges right now. We'll just put it like that with their council and their mayor. But what we are looking to do in Ascension Parish is continue to invest in economic development. I'm proud that even during the economic downturn years ago, we continue to invest and plant those seeds. And actually, as my run for parish president next year, that's going to be a key component of my campaign, is making sure we continue to invest and expand our economic development.
Okay, so we'll see how that happens. So talk to me about the cut. I think we mentioned about the tax. Can we expect the tax initiative to be on the ballot in the future, or is it just completely dead in the water?
I don't think it's dead in the water, but I think we're looking at ways to increase revenue without raising taxes. We can. You know, there's no point in being dishonest with people. We're facing $1 billion worth of infrastructure that needs to be done, in roads and sewer. And so you can't really make the progress that needs to be made without looking at the revenue side of the equation as well. But there are some ideas that I think will come to the forefront next year, perhaps during definitely during the lower plan for infrastructure. There'll be some ways we can get creative and try to expand our revenues, continue to cut expenses. And then we need to be honest about perhaps looking at toll roads for some of these mega projects like the Baton Rouge Bump, like the Ascension Livingston Corridor, major traffic initiatives that are going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars, but it could make a huge difference. We just recently, on the West Bank Expressway, the last council meeting actually, invested in that to try to move that along. Those are all projects that can make a difference at rush hour, taking strain off the interstate, and I think it will go a long way towards helping out gridlock.
Okay, sounds good. Are there any other major initiatives going on in Ascension that we should know about?
Actually, there are. One of which is a group of citizens has gotten together and is demanding better recreation now, better recreation improvements for all of Ascension Parish. We're actually the youngest parish in the state, and yet we don't have any dedicated funding for recreation, unlike all the parishes around us. And similar to my comments earlier on the commercial front, you know, people are having to take their kids outside the parish and spend their money and recreate outside the parish. So the plan they put together is going to be on the ballot in November. It's overhauling and improving every local park, creating a sportsplex with dozens of ball fields, and also having a performing arts theater.
Wow, that's awesome. A performing arts theater?
Yep.
Okay. Now, how is that going to go? The funding, we kind of always go back to funding and how these initiatives are going to be funded. Most recently, the balloon event that took place several years ago, I guess it was a couple years ago, that didn't go over well. It wasn't properly funded. They weren't able to, they didn't make any money off of it. I think they went into the red. So when I think about these big initiatives that are in the pipeline, the funding mechanism and the stream is vital, and we need to make certain that there's ongoing and increased funding for these initiatives. So is that something that's on the table, or are these just kind of grand ideas that may not have been well thought out?
No, actually, with regards to recreation, their recommendation for funding it is to do a 5 mil property tax, and that's what's on the ballot in November. And every one of those dollars is highlighted as far as what they would be spent on all the local park initiatives and all of those programs I just mentioned earlier. With regards to the Balloon Festival, last year we had a volunteer that basically ran it. And, you know, and sure, it you know, as a volunteer, he's worked as hard as he could to get it going, and you know, perhaps there could have been some more oversight and all that, but we're looking forward to a great balloon festival this year. We've kind of scaled it back a little bit and increased our sponsorships. In fact, there's an announcement going on in an hour for one of our crown sponsors that's going to be coming out. So I'm looking forward to the balloon festival being a success. And again, it's a community festival. It's about quality of life. It's not there to make money. But it's, you know, it's anybody that's actually been to the balloon festival, you know, I think was pleased by how it went.
Sounds good. So where can people find out more about the plan as far as details and costs associated with the initiatives going on in Ascension?
For the recreation plan, you can find it on facebook.com/Ascension Parish Parks, and there's details of all the initiatives on that front.
Okay, sounds good. So what is your biggest concern as you think about Ascension in 5 years from now? If you can envision, how long have you lived in the parish?
15 years.
Okay. So if you think 5 to 10 years from now, with all of the major plans and economic development, what's your biggest concern? Like, what keeps you up at night as an official in the parish?
Well, it's what we talked about earlier. It's infrastructure. It's how we can keep pace with it. Have we planned enough to try to mitigate some of the growing pains? And have, you know, of course we're behind right now. So how do we deliver for the people when they have, you know, daily frustrations sitting in traffic? And of course it's tough to do with the price tag that is involved in some of the red tape on these, you know, studies. Unfortunately, with a lot of these are federal and state roads that, you know, that have mandatory requirements. So how can we deliver fast enough results for people? That's what keeps me up at night.
Yep. So is that possible, though? So when I think about infrastructure, I'm a resident of Ascension, and my car stays dirty just because of all of the infrastructure and all the changes that are happening. So it's frustrating, and I recognize that this is something that needs to happen, and I recognize that it should happen. But at the same time, I'm wondering, when is it going to be over? So right. I'm sure that I'm not in the minority, and I'm sure that other residents feel the exact same way. So when we think about timelines and expectations, because then it starts to affect quality of life, right? So what kind of timeline are we talking about? Is it something that's going to take 15 years or 20 years? When can I just go to the car wash and my car stays clean for at least 2 days? Like, well, how does that happen?
Well, I know the road you're talking about, Highway 73, because we have a business on it right now, a family business as well, and it is that construction project is there's just no excuses for it. It's dragged on way too long. It's been a huge challenge. I mean, 42 is another project that's underway. Luckily, that seems to be moving better, and those are two of the biggest road projects ever, and we're finally glad to get them done. But as you said, there's a price of progress, and it is painful to go through. And it's just about trying to hold people accountable, maybe having incentives for all of those contractors to really get it done faster, you know, and just really being creative with how we can get things done faster, easier, and more, you know, efficient.
Okay, sounds good. Well, Chris, thank you so much for your time today. We look forward to seeing the continuous progress and ascension over the next few years. Next, we have Megan Riley Shannon, the owner of Center of Musical Arts. Megan, how are you?
I'm fine, Erica. Thank you. How are you?
Wonderful. Welcome to the Jim Eakster Show.
Thanks for having me.
So Center of Musical Arts, or CMA, is approaching its one-year anniversary. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So yep. What's the theme of the event?
The theme of the event is music and wellness for kids. I was inspired by Family Fit Day, and also it was a friend of ours who owns a music school in Texas did something very similar. So I'd heard about that, and then we had Family Fit Day here. I'm a runner. I run with varsity sports. Wellness, exercise, living well is a big part of my life, and obviously music is also a very big part of my life. So I think the two go very hand in hand, and I would love to see this community do more with, you know, the two together, music and wellness, living well, getting our kids exercise and eating right. So we have a few friends coming and joining us. Indie Plate will be there. If you're not familiar with them, they are a grocery delivery service delivering local fresh ingredients from Louisiana farmers and artisans to residents. You just go on their website, you decide what you want, and they deliver it right to your door. I use it myself. They're fantastic. We also have the owner of Open Bar coming. She'll be demonstrating one of her kids' classes. We also have Rafe O'Neill and Justin Ducharme coming to talk about piano maintenance and care. And we will be doing class demonstrations at 11:30, 12:30, and 1:30. There will be free giveaways at those times also. And we'll be demonstrating our three classes for beginners.
That's an interesting theme, music and wellness. Mm-hmm. So is music playing in the background and we're just dancing around? Like, how do you infuse both of those together?
I love it. That is a good visual. no, we're going to have... now you just got me distracted with that visual. We will have music playing. Kids, our piano students will actually be providing some background music. Okay. When they're not playing, we have a disc clavier that will be playing. Interesting. And they our building is a gigantic rectangle. So we're wanting people to come in the front door. One of our parents will be greeting everybody. They'll come in. There is music playing. And then you can greet each one of the vendors, Open Bar, Indie Plate, and the others that will be there. Get all of our information, get their information, watch and participate in the class demonstrations, talk to us. Fall registration will be available, so you can register for classes that start on Monday.
Okay.
That will be available, and you can talk to any one of us. I will be there. My two partners, Patty Masita and Laura Masita Prey, we opened it together. We will all be on hand to answer questions, register kids for classes. You'll be seeing me do the class demonstrations.
Gotcha. So no Congo dancing.
No Congo dancing. No, okay. I'm sorry. If you're wanting that, I hate to disappoint, but there won't be no Congo dancing.
Now, understand that you infuse technology into teaching music. I thought that was fascinating. Explain to us a little bit of how that works.
Well, this is one of the reasons we opened CMA. We wanted to be able to use this modern technology. It's a big part of kids' lives these days. We have a nine keyboard Clavinova, Yamaha Clavinova Lab, sorry, can't really say that very well, where we teach our beginner classes. We have a Mac computer that we are able to use home concert with up on the screen. We have internet-based programs that we use. We use the iPad a lot. Mm. We use the app, the Evernote app, for our assignments. We have a lot of other teaching apps. That Rhythm Lab and the Most Addicting Sheep Game. The kids absolutely love these. I can't even describe to you how I give them the iPad and they will just sit there and play these games, and they're learning at the same time, which is even better. We can send them videos. We also have a computer lab where they can do composition. We have notation software for them there. They can also do internet-based theory games.
So, interesting. So is there an actual instructor as well, or is it all guided by technology?
Well, we instruct the piano lessons, obviously. Our lessons are, when you're a beginner coming into CMA, will be placed in one of three group classes, depending on age and grade and level. Transfer students will be placed accordingly. The three classes are 4 and 5 year olds, Music for Little Mozarts, then Celebrate 1A for the traditional age beginner 6 to 10, and then we have Way Cool Keyboarding for the older beginners. They're placed into group classes. They're on the keyboards. In each of the lessons, and this is the great thing about the group classes, we can be very creative. We do hands-on teaching, and then I do a lot with the apps in the group classes. I'll pass the app around. Each one will do a round of the game, and it's all interactive. They don't just sit there with their faces in the iPad or the computer. We guide them. The great thing about the computer lab is that our private students can go to the computer 15 minutes before or after the lesson and work on their theory games, and it's reinforcement to what we teach in the lessons.
Interesting. Do you have any, when my daughter was younger, I used to take her to Mommy and Me classes. Do you offer any services like that for the mother and the child?
Our Music in Little Mozarts is like that. We do require parents to be in that class. It's for 4 and 5 year olds, pre-K and K. And this is actually a new class to us this year, starting next Monday. You can register for it at the open house on Saturday. It's a really fun class. It prepares students to go into our preparatory program.
Interesting. Do you partner with any schools, private or public schools?
You know what? Right now, we're not. Music for Little Mozarts, we are working on doing some satellite classes for that. We'll have a satellite class at Jefferson United Methodist, and we're working on getting another one going in a couple other churches also.
Okay. Yeah, no, so, that sounds good. I can certainly see partnering with public schools, particularly since music isn't necessarily at the forefront of education now, and oftentimes is it's actually just not a part of the curriculum at all.
Yeah.
Now, what about, so do you teach adults as well, or is it just children?
We do teach adults. We have a fantastic class called Recreational Music Making for Adults, and it's for those adults that have always wanted to play the piano but never thought they could. I have so many adults coming to me saying, I wish I had taken piano lessons when I was a kid. I wish I hadn't quit. And then they say, oh, but I have no talent. You don't need talent. You just have to have desire. It's an 8-week course. In one hour a week for 8 weeks. At the end of the 8 weeks, you have the choice. You can keep going into another 8 weeks, or you can stop, and you're always welcome to come back. We have a class called Music and Merlot that is a one-time two-hour class.
Oh, that sounds fun. Yes, I'm signing up.
The Merlot, it gets you, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Right there. We actually had our first one on Saturday, and it was a huge success. They had a ton of fun. We need at least four people for a class to happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, grab your husband or your best friend and then two others and sign up. You can sign up on our website. Just go to our website, cmabr.net, go to classes, then down on Music and Merlot, click on it, and then you can see the ones that are available and sign up right there.
Sounds good. Well, we wish you much success on August the 16th.
From
11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Thanks so much for joining us for the Jim Inkster Show. I appreciate everyone's graciousness for listening to me as a guest host, Erica Crenshaw. Take care, and I wish you a wonderful and blessed week.
Podcasts of The Jim Inkster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Inkster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.